Member Week is back at Lowe's with big savings for pros. Now through October 15th, my Lowe's Pro Rewards members get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, tools, building materials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings before they're gone. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
I can't tell you exactly when it started, only that I was a child, around 7 or 8 years old, when I realized I wasn't alone. Back then, my family had just moved into what should have been a safe and happy neighborhood. The kind of place where kids rode bikes until dark and families gathered on porches. But while my friends felt at ease there, I didn't. From the beginning, there was something else, a presence. At first, it was just a feeling. Lying in bed at night, I would sense someone watching me. Not my parents checking in, not a sibling wandering the hall. This was heavier, colder, different. It was the kind of feeling that makes the hairs on your arms rise even though the room is still. I kept it to myself at first because what child wants to admit they feel haunted? But as the years passed, the presence only grew. When I was 9, we moved again. Not far, just 2 doors down from the first house, I thought that change might break the spell. Instead, the same presence followed. It wasn't tied to the house. It was tied to me. For 5 years, he was there, always at night, always lingering. Sometimes I would wake up certain that someone was standing just beyond the edge of the bed. Other times I would hear a knock or feel the blanket shift as if something had sat down where no one should be. Then, when I was about 14, my family moved to another city. And for almost 2 years, everything stopped. I slept peacefully. No eyes in the dark, no shadows slipping across the yard. I let myself believe it was over. But when life brought me back to that same neighborhood, though on a different street, he returned. And this time, he wasn't content to simply lurk. He wanted me to know he was there. When he came back, I noticed it immediately, not because of one big event, but because the small things stopped being small. They added up, and when small things stack, they become undeniable. The first obvious change was the weather around my yard. On more than one night, I stood at my bedroom window and watched while the street stayed still, and my yard turned into a small storm. Leaves would twist and spin in a tight circle just outside the fence. The air around my windows would feel cold and tight, like someone had turned on a fan aimed only at my house. It didn't blow through the whole block, only the strip of grass that belonged to me. It's a weird thing to explain to someone who hasn't seen it. Everything outside your bedroom moves as if a pocket of wind has been created just for you. It makes you feel exposed in a way that having an open window never does. Then, there were the lights. He started doing things with light that I couldn't explain. The backyard would have these quick, surgical flashes. Not like a camera, but bright enough to bleach out details for a second. I could see the flash paint the grass and a few branches, and then it would be gone. Sometimes the flashes were directional, highlighting a particular spot on the patio. Often afterward, I'd see a strange arrangement of sticks or leaves laid out in a pattern near the fence, like someone had made a crude marker, and pushed it forward toward the house. One morning, I found a tidy ring of twigs pointing at my window. There was no dirt disturbance beyond the ring, no sign of a footstep. It felt deliberate. The windows became a focus. My bedroom is almost all glass on one side, 10 windows that look out to the backyard. I don't know why the house was built that way, but I hated it. Long before I knew why. After he came back, the knocking started. It wasn't one time, it became a thing he did on purpose. It would begin as a single, slow tap on one pane, then move methodically across the others like he was walking the fence and rapping at each square to see if I was still there. The sound is different in the dead of night, less like knocking and more like someone making a point, making you aware of where you are and how alone you can feel. The first night I felt trapped at the edge of sleep was the worst. I woke up into darkness, the backyard light had gone off, and the room was completely black. I could sense him in a way I can only describe as cold pressure. Then I realized I couldn't move properly. My arm felt heavy and slow, like it was submerged in water. When I tried to sit up, my body refused. It was as if some invisible rim around my mattress had cupped me and held me down. People call it sleep paralysis sometimes, and maybe that's part of it. But sleep paralysis, in the clinical sense, doesn't explain the next thing. The thing at the window. He wasn't a solid figure that night. His outline was wrong, squat and round like a short, chubby man floating a few inches off the ground. He laughed a laugh that made my skin crawl, high, thin, and joyful, in the way bullies are joyful when they've cornered you. He leaned his face into the glass and grinned until his mouth was too wide for a human face. I tried to scream. Nothing came out. I tried to reach the phone on my nightstand, and my hand moved in a slow, clumsy motion, as if I were wading through thick syrup. I was aware of being afraid in a physical way. My chest locked, my stomach flipped, every part of me screaming to move. Then the thing made a sound, a sharp, high shriek, and I snapped awake in a rush, heart thudding, the backyard light back on. I sat up sweating, and for a long time I couldn't tell whether it had been a dream or not. After that night, the incidents came quicker. I woke to the sound of running water in the kitchen at 3 a.m. once. The faucet had been turned on, but nobody was there. Another time, the sprinklers came on in the middle of the night, even though the system was off. A set of garden chairs was moved into a precise semicircle facing the house one morning. The grass beneath them had no footprints around it. Once the grill, heavy and bolted to the patio, had been opened and the lid propped up with a stray piece of wood, as if someone had been playing at making a campfire. The haunting wasn't only about physical tricks, it had a psychological element, an intent to make me doubt my own senses. Voices began to thread through my sleep sometimes, too soft to catch the words, but close enough to make me flinch. I would wake with the impression of someone saying my name. Then the silence would press back in, and I'd be left listening so hard I couldn't hear anything real. Often the name came as a whisper, right near my ear. Once I woke and felt, unmistakably, a breath close to my neck, as if someone had leaned over me. The cat jumped off the bed and bolted out of the room. Her instinct was loud and blunt. Something was wrong. The cat has been my single most honest witness. She sleeps with me a lot because she likes the warmth, but she also senses things I don't. I started letting her sleep under the covers on the nights I felt most watched. She'd growl or hiss at a spot near the window, fixating on the air instead of a toy. I would shine my light there and find nothing, but her body told me what my mind wanted to argue away. Animals don't do ritual. They react. If a cat won't rest near a place, you start listening to that more than you listen to the offhand rationalizations people hand you. Then came the night B saw him again. Until that point, most people had dismissed my stories as nightmares or stress, but B was direct about what he'd seen. A man in black, tall and still, standing near the back fence when he walked out to smoke. He came back inside with his face pale and said he'd felt watched. The same way I always describe it. His words were a kind of validation that was at once comforting and terrifying. Comforting because I was no longer the only witness. terrifying because if someone else perceived him, what did that mean about the limits of his patience? After B's sighting, the things he did became bolder. He tested whether people would come into the backyard and then hid from them. He started to play with form more often, moving from shadow to shape to a childlike figure that would materialize in the corner of a room. He'd show up as a short boy and sit at the foot of the bed in my dreams. When I woke, I'd find small piles of leaves or twigs by the window where he'd been in the dream. Creature and environment were being used like props in a show designed for me to watch and doubt my senses. Another pattern developed. He seemed to prefer certain areas. The back door and the sliding glass were the obvious places, but he also liked the corner near the shed where my grill sat. He would make noises there, the thunk of metal, the sound of a chair scraping, and then stop. My neighbors started to tell me odd things in passing. An elderly woman across the street, when she thought I wasn't listening, told me that that part of the neighborhood had always had weird stories attached to it. Whether it's folklore or coincidence, stories like that make you realize you're not always the first to notice something. I tried to fight it with normal solutions. I had an electrician check the backyard lights. He found nothing wrong. We installed motion sensor lights and a couple of cameras to catch whatever was happening in the night. The cameras recorded glitches, sudden flares of light, brief overexposures, and sometimes thick, dark fog that filled the frame for a second. Footage would show a spike in motion detected and then nothing at all. No person, no deer, no car. The tech explanations, bugs, glare, animals, could fit parts of what we captured, but not all of it. The footage that shows a blank frame while my motion sensor screams, blame the technology, not the experience. That's the maddening part. You can provide physical data that proves something unusual occurred and still not be able to show anyone exactly what that was. I read and asked and tried to find support in online forums. People suggested everything from sleep paralysis to electromagnetic interference to pranksters who liked attention. I considered all of it. I took practical steps to go, kept the light on outside, closed the blinds, slept with the cat, kept my phone by the bed. Sometimes these things helped, other times they didn't. The cruelty of this presence is in its persistence. He doesn't need to be dramatic to hurt you. He can make small adjustments to your life that chip away at sleep and peace. 1,000 tiny invasions stack into a life where you are always a little tired, always a little tense. You stop trusting your nights the way you used to, and that kind of tiredness leeches into your days. Toward the end of that period, things shifted again. The visits became less about shakes and flashes and more about trying to be inside my room while I slept. He tried different strategies, making sounds outside the window to get me to look, changing forms to be familiar enough to lower my guard, even appearing in other people's dreams. Each time he pushed a boundary, I pushed back with small, clumsy routines. Light on, curtains closed, cat on the bed. B checked the yard if he stayed over. When I could, I invited people over and told them to use the backyard so there would be noise and presence outside. Noise and company, it seemed, annoyed him. But he is patient. He is willing to wait for me to be alone. That's why on nights when B couldn't stay, I doubled down on the rules that seemed to help. I kept the lamp glowing, the radio on low, and the cat close. I chose to live that way because it was better than living in terror. It was a way to manage the menace. I tried everything I could think of to make it stop. First, I went practical. The electrician checked all the wiring and replaced a few fixtures. We installed motion-activated floodlights and a cheap security system with cameras aimed at the yard and the back windows. For a while, it felt like progress. The lamps made the yard look less like a private storm. The cameras gave me something to point at if I needed proof. But the cameras never caught a clear image of him. They caught flares of light, sudden overexposed frames, or nothing at all while the motion sensors screamed. Technology gave me evidence that something odd was happening, but not the thing I needed to show people to make them stop seeing me like I was exaggerating. I tried more human strategies, too. I told friends and neighbors in hushed tones. Some of them laughed and left it at that. A few, the ones who'd had small brushes with the same history of the place, offered stories they'd kept quiet for years. A woman who swore she'd heard a child singing outside in the winter. A man who found toys arranged on his porch in the morning with no kid in sight. The repetition mattered. It wasn't just me. That bit of shared experience made the situation less isolating. It didn't make it less terrifying. I tried ritual. I'm not religious in a conventional way, but I'm not stupid about comfort. My grandmother used to say small blessings over us when we were kids. When things got worse, I asked her to say them again, and I started doing them before bed myself. I burned sage once more as a show of trying than because I expected any magic. I called a pastor when it felt like more than memory and fear. He came, walked the house, said a prayer, and placed his hand at the back door. For a night or two, it felt quieter. Whether the prayers did anything, or whether I was calming because someone else had declared this fight with words, I couldn't say. The small victories tended to be that kind of thing, temporary, fragile, and mostly psychological. They were enough to get me through a few nights without a panic attack. I also focused on the practical mental health work. Panic attacks were becoming regular after bad nights. I saw a counselor who taught me grounding techniques, naming 5 things you can see, 4 you can touch, 3 you can hear, 2 you can smell, 1 you can taste. It sounds banal, but when your world collapses in a night of thunder and glass, grounding anchors you back into the ordinary. I practiced breathing exercises until they became second nature. Slow inhales, extended exhales. I kept a lamp on for 30 minutes after waking from a bad dream because immediate plunges into darkness made the running heart worse. There were other things I couldn't control. He continued to escalate and to experiment. Once he started leaving small tokens, a single button placed carefully on a step, a circle of dirt on the patio as if someone had sat there and stirred the soil, small hand-sized prints pressed into the condensation on a window one morning. Those items were maddening because they were physical and small enough to ignore, and yet they confirmed he had been present in the real world the night before. I learned to keep company. He seemed to prefer solitude. When the yard was full of the noise of people, voices, music, laughter, he retreated. I started having afternoon barbecues on purpose, inviting people to use the back door and the patio even when it was a little rainy or inconvenient. The presence disliked noise. He disliked witnesses. The sound of voices and movement pushed him back into the margins. That was a small, practical gain, company as deterrent. There were nights, though, when none of that helped. Once, during a period when I'd been traveling for work and B was house-sitting, he went further than I'd seen before. B woke in the middle of the night and saw a pale woman standing by the head of the bed. She looked at him for a moment and then dropped to the floor like someone letting out a breath. That same night, the cat bolted for the door and wouldn't come in until morning. B left early that next day, pale and exhausted. He insisted on sleeping in on call from then on because he said he didn't want to be alone in the house at night. Having someone willing to sit vigil matters. It slows the creep of fear into your bones. I tried to normalize small parts of my life again. I took day trips. I saw friends. I worked. I learned to prepare for the nights that might come. Charger by the bed. Phone fully charged with emergency contacts. A playlist of songs that made me feel less alone. I kept the curtains heavy and the lamp half on. When I had to be out late, I asked someone to come home with me, or I arranged to leave my car blocking the back gate until morning. None of these things are heroic. They are logistics. They are the kind of small, pragmatic defenses you craft when the big answers don't exist. And so I live between two truths. There is a presence that has marked my life, and there are ways to manage the terror so it doesn't devour you. Some nights are fine. You forget almost how tense your shoulders have been for years. Other nights are bad. The knocking starts, the shutters rattle, the cat hisses. The sound of it is an old rhythm by now, and my reactions are trained muscles. I reach for the phone, flip the lamp, call a friend, name five things I can see to come back to the present. It's not the life I would have chosen, but it's the life that works. People ask me sometimes whether I think it will ever leave. I don't know. I hope it will. Sometimes I tell myself that attention feeds it, so if I ignore it, it will move on. Sometimes I tell myself that it attaches to place or to unresolved history that one day someone will research and fix. Maybe one day a new family will move in and the pattern will stop. Maybe not. Until then, I keep the lamp beside the bed, the cat on my legs, and a friend on speed dial. I keep the back door locked and the curtains drawn. I tell people that if they use the patio at night, it's better than leaving it to him. And when the knocking comes, I say the same words I've repeated with as much voice as I can. You are not welcome here. Leave now. Sometimes he does. Sometimes he laughs. Either way, morning comes and that fragile consolation, daylight, neighbors, the mundane chores of being human, stitches the night back together. If you take anything from this story, take this. If something lodges in your life and won't leave, you don't have to fight it alone. Build simple defenses, keep witnesses, use lights and company in the blunt animal certainty of a pet. Get help for the panic it brings. Don't let humiliation stop you from asking for support, and when the night is long and the presence prowls, remember the smallest ordinary things. A kettle whistling, a neighbor's laugh, the garbage truck at 7 a.m. are the things that prove the world is still on your side. Keep waiting for them. Keep leaning into them. They are the rescue that comes every morning.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus plans November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to take care of yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps. Ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who pieced together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.